This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Tim Henney. Our first guest this morning joining us in the studio is Craig Gordon. He's a local Parkite. He's also a forecaster for the Utah Avalanche Center. Now, every day on KPCW during the local news hour, we hear from the Utah Avalanche Center. But we invited Craig to come in to take a few more minutes with us to talk about this year's snowpack, why it's so dangerous, and what the Utah Avalanche Center does on a daily basis to spread awareness.
Craig,
great to have you.
Oh, it is great to be had. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, we're doing wonderful, and we're expecting more snow on the way. So
it's begun.
It is.
A couple flakes are falling out of the sky on the drive in. Yeah,
and
great winter.
You know, you are so busy as a forecaster, especially this year, and as Tim mentioned in the intro, 4 fatalities in 4 weeks, and this requires you as a member of the team to go out and investigate post incident.
Exactly. Yes.
Talk about your schedule first of all.
Well, my schedule is really crazy. For some reason, my eyelids crack open without an alarm every morning at 2:30 without fail. And
is 2:30 actually in the morning?
It's somewhere between the morning and when you roll in at night. I don't know. They're often those times are blurred, right? And I get up. I get my forecast out. I usually head to the gym for about an hour and a half. I come back as the rest of the world is starting to wake up. And then I start my day and get on the snow. So it is, it's an amazingly enriching life. I feel super, super blessed to be able to get to do what I love and love what I do.
Wonderful. Well, we're lucky to have you and the rest of the forecasters and everything the Utah Avalanche Center does to keep us safe. And one of the things that I think that you have begun to do, or maybe I have just more recently noticed it, is that you're putting a lot more mixed media out there to raise our awareness. And it's a wonderful thing. You have one of Trent Meisenheimer, who is he also a forecaster? This incredible filmmaker.
He is. He is a remarkable talent, an amazing gift, as all my colleagues are at the Utah Avalanche Center. Trent in particular, he and I had an epiphany about 5 or 6 years ago with a GoPro camera. And, you know, when GoPros first came on the scene and people were, you know, kind of doing, hey, watch what I'm doing and look at what I'm doing kind of thing, we turned that medium from that into an educational conduit. And one day we were out looking at snow. We realized that the conditions were super scary, super spooky. He engages the GoPro as we remotely trigger, so from a distance without even being on the slope, this ginormous avalanche in the western Uintas. And this thing's like 6 to 8 feet deep. It's hundreds of feet wide. We record it. It was like, you know, this, I guess, early days of CNN moment where it's like, wow, we can take this piece of technology and implement it towards education, towards outreach, deliver that message to the public, deliver that to the media. And, you know, it was like nearly real-time reporting. I mean, it was like we were inventing 3-chord rock and roll. And on the ride down the canyon, I remember Trent downloading this thing, you know, and getting it into a format, and then us landing and getting grounded in Salt Lake and then delivering it. And it was like speaking a new language. It was really remarkable. And that medium, I really think, helped people understand then what we were talking about. You know, I can remember 20 years ago when we started adding pictures to our forecast. And as my boss and mentor, Bruce Tremper, said, you know, pictures, man, they're worth a 1,000 words, right? Because you can see what somebody is trying to explain. Well, the moving part of that and the video, if pictures are worth 1,000 words, that was worth a kajillion words, because it was nearly like you could put yourself as an outside observer into the shoes of the forecaster and right on the bed surface of the avalanche. It was a remarkable time. So, yeah, we kind of learned from that, and that has become basically the standard. It's remarkable.
Craig, how do you and the other members of the center feel about what Lynn said, you know, your work to keep us safe, and yet this year we've experienced 4 fatalities in 4 weeks? So, you know, is the center keeping people safe? I think it's hard to measure, right? When we have a fatality, it's a tragic situation. We're trying to reduce those. But I could also argue that without the center, this year's fatalities might have exceeded some number that we find even hard to comprehend. It could be in, you know, 20, 30, 50, with the activity that's happening in the backcountry, with the snowmobile access that's out there, with the backcountry skiers.
Sure.
So you could look at it and say, well, we've kept, you know, 46 people safe,
uh-huh,
and 4 have died rather than 50 having died. And so how do you guys kind of frame that?
So what we do know, and I mean, I see it when I drive around here on a busy holiday or on a storm day. Let's face it, the mountains are getting loved to death, right? Tim, just like you alluded to, it's the gear that has allowed us to get deeper into the backcountry on steeper, more avalanche-prone terrain. You know, you look around this community and people are fit and they're getting after it and they've got headlamps on in the morning, whereas 25, 30 years ago, maybe there was a handful of people in the backcountry and now it is crawling with people. So we do know that the backcountry community and travel is growing exponentially. It's exploding. That doesn't lessen or decrease the community impacts of even one avalanche fatality, but when you look at the sheer numbers, feels to me like we're doing a pretty good job. Now, if we go back a couple years, we had 2 back-to-back years with no avalanche fatalities, 3 years with no snowmobile-related avalanche fatalities. So that was the good news. The bad news really here is that this recent string of avalanche fatalities, the folks that were involved either had no avalanche rescue gear or didn't have the full complement. And maybe in some cases that could have really made a difference at the end of the day. So obviously you need the gear. But right now, as in any case with avalanches, avoidance is really the big ticket item.
Well, avoidance, knowing the slope angle and knowing the danger of the day. I'm always amazed when backcountry aficionados such as yourself say, well, you know, Lynn, you can be safe even on a high danger day. You just have to choose where you go. And I always say, that's okay. I'll just wait.
Right.
Until it becomes safer.
And so, you know what? We have got some great exit strategies, right? And right here in our own backyard, not only do we get the greatest snow in the world, and yeah, our license plates don't lie, but we also have world-class ski resorts. And at those world-class ski resorts, hardworking men of the snow safety teams, of the ski patrol teams, the hardworking women of those teams combine to reduce the avalanche risk, do consistent avalanche reduction work throughout the day as storms are materializing. And those hardworking men and women help keep the resort community and the resort population safe. So what a great exit strategy. I got a place to go. Next, if you do plan to visit or travel in the backcountry, what we need to do is just be patient, tone our slope angles down, and then most importantly, figure out where the avalanche danger, or as I like to say, where the avalanche dragon lives. So if the avalanche dragon is living on north-facing slopes, and they are at upper elevations and they're steep and wind loaded, and that avalanche dragon is going to break to the ground and it's an unmanageable situation, I simply avoid that. If that avalanche dragon doesn't exist on south facing slopes and it's sunny and I can go ski pow in the sun, well, who doesn't like to ski powder in the sun? So you simply use that as an exit strategy. And then finally, if you're headed out with the family for a snowshoe, for a rip on the snowmobile, man, you could go out in some big open meadow without any steep slopes above or adjacent to where you're riding and have a blast. So plenty of exit strategies out there. We just need to implement those during times of either elevated or high avalanche danger.
I want to ask you about what makes this year's snowpack dangerous. I did watch your video.
Yeah.
You can find it on YouTube or on the Utah Avalanche Center website, which is utahavalanchecenter.org.
Uh-huh.
And the name of the YouTube video is Avalanche Accident in the Western Uintas. And you begin that by examining the snowpack and explaining to everybody via the YouTube video what makes this year's snowpack dangerous.
Right.
With the heavy water moisture laden snowpack on a very dangerous, fragile layer. And when that fragile layer compresses and gives way, as you said, it's like pulling the carpet out
exactly.
or the rug out from under these 5 feet or 6 feet or 7 feet in some cases of really water-laden layers of snow. So could you talk about what makes that a dangerous, and can that layer that's weak rebond?
Great question. So What has really been the game changer this year? We started off with some early season snow. It got cold right around Christmas. We had some little light density snow. Remember, it got super cold right around New Year's. That snow that was on the surface, I mean, it helped get resorts open. It was cold enough for snowmaking. But in the backcountry, that snow grew weak and sugary. And then we started turning on the water faucet, right? You know, in the first week of January, things started getting going. We stacked up several storms of very heavy moisture-laden snow. Saw a pretty good avalanche cycle in mid-January. And, you know, things after a while, after some clear, calm weather, snowpack becomes comfortable in its own skin. What really started to turn the corner, though, were the February storms. And Tim, you were saying, yeah, moisture-laden heavy snow. So what we have going on is that the storms that we have been receiving generally are out of the west and southwest. And you have had a couple of just brilliant Park City-centric storms that rolled in February that started out dense and heavy, went out light and fluffy, right? But it's that dense, heavy snow that's really the game changer. So we might just think of snow as this light, fluffy stuff that falls straight out of the sky and blows up into our face, but we've got to think the way the snowpack thinks. And the snowpack thinks that we are not only building structure on the snow we're riding in, but also building structure on the snow we're riding on. So if we start the year off with potato chips and we slowly add heavier, say, Cadillacs or Oldsmobiles on top, if you slowly add those cars on top, those potato chips will adjust. If you do it rapidly, those potato chips are going to crumple, they're going to fail, and the Oldsmobiles come crashing down the mountain. During that time when things are adjusting, if we roll along and knock the legs out from underneath it, we kick the dominoes out, so to speak, well, then the entire mountain comes crashing down on us. So this year, we do have some weaknesses in the snowpack. For the first time, remember last year was historically dry. So that's close in our memory. But 2 years ago, we had a great wet year. The thing we were missing 2 years ago were weak layers in our snowpack. We got lots of water, lots of wind 2 years ago, but very little in the way of weak layers. This year, we've got the weak layers. Now we got the water. That makes the snowpack cranky. So where do things stand right now? Over time, especially in these deeper snowpack zones of the Central Wasatch, Big Cottonwood, Little Cottonwood Canyon, the Park City area, things are starting to become happy in their own skin. Wherever the snowpack has remained shallow and weak, periphery areas, the Western Uintas, the Manti Skyline, the La Salle, some zones in the Logan area mountains, once they start getting the water, they're going to see another round of big avalanches. So, yeah, truly we're sort of blessed in this little triangulation here of Big Cottonwood, Little Cottonwood, and the Park City area. The other wild card are any slopes that have previously avalanched this year, and they will also have a thin snowpack. Mm-hmm. So it's not totally straightforward, and we got to do a lot of thinking. So remember, the snowpack gets cranky when it goes through a rapid change. We are looking now at some pretty two good-looking storms that are headed our way. First shot has got a big slug of moisture, big slug of water. I bet you we even see the R word. Oh, man, rain down at lower elevations. It's great for our water year. Eventually, Tim, it's going to be great for the snowpack because it is going to compress those weak layers of snow. It's going to help them over time heal. The problem is we tend to be impatient as backcountry riders. We mm-hmm. tend to want to get out after it right after the storm. And you mentioned just the high degree of competition now to get first tracks. Hey, in this game, in the backcountry avalanche world, patience is the key to longevity. So we tone it down. We allow the snowpack to adjust. Check out UtahAvalancheCenter.org, your one-stop shop for all things avalanche. Be armed with the latest advisory for the zone you want to travel in. And why don't we plan on meeting back here in a couple weeks? We can high-five each other about what the great snow has been doing. And let's not come back here and talk about another sad at the end of the day case where any avalanche is preventable, and any avalanche fatality is preventable.
That's right. Craig Gordon, the Utah Avalanche Center. We've got to let you go, Craig, but before we do,
yeah,
tell our listeners, what are the items that you do not dare go out into the backcountry without?
Okay, so first, remember, avoidance is the ticket. But then if we do happen to make a mistake, we're caught and carried in an avalanche, not only do we need experienced partners, but everybody in our group needs to wear and know how to use an avalanche beacon, a shovel, and a probe. Those three items are just basics, ABCs, you know, beacon, shovel, probe. So along with that, again, check the local avalanche advisory. Know the kind of avalanche dragon you're dealing with. Avoid that because any avalanche that's triggered right now, and especially as we get into this next storm cycle, is going to be deep. It's going to break wide. We're seeing timber snapping avalanches. So, you know, in that case, the only way we manage that is through avoidance. And we've got to remember it is a long ski season. We've got lots of great powder filled days left ahead of us. So, yeah, let's just practice a little patience. And I guarantee you, over time, if we practice a little patience, the payoff will be remarkable because we will have some really wonderful powder-filled days.
Craig, great to see you. Always love talking to you. Craig Gordon, he's a local Park City resident and a forecaster with the Utah Avalanche Center. Again, UtahAvalancheCenter.org. Watch all the videos. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, a video is worth about 1,000,000 words.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Thanks, Craig.
Oh, thanks for having me.